From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Halloween Day, October 31st, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunathchi Shawa Toeksknusam Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we talk with author John Straley about his new book, Big Breath In, a new standalone novel in which he pays homage to his wife and their shared investigative interests. We talk with the girls on the run about their Ghoul Empowerment Halloween Fun Run happening this Saturday at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. We get to know about the care and service of Bartlett Hospital's hospice team. And we look ahead with artist Fu Bao and learn about what he's got in store for his first Friday event at Kindred Post. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and I need more cowbell. Happy Halloween, everybody. We also need more John Straley. You may know my first guest from his Cecil Younger series of novels about a PI in Sitka, Alaska. They have won him awards and other accolades. Or from his more recent Cold Storage series about adventures in a remote Alaskan town. And he was also the writer laureate for Alaska from 2006 to 2008. And now, coming this November, John Straley has a new novel, Big Breath In, which isn't set in Alaska, but continues to draw inspiration from his life. In it, he pays homage to his real-life wife and her renowned career as a marine biologist. You can find out more about John and all of his novels and works at johnstraley.com, S-T-R-A-L-E-Y, johnstraley.com. It's a pleasure now to have John joining us to talk about his new novel. Thank you so much, John, for joining us. Wasaiti, how's it going?
Good. Thank you so much, Boston. I'm really happy to be here with you and your audience.
Yeah, this is great. It's you now live down in Carmel, but you lived in Sitka for, 40 years?
Oh, 47 years.
Yeah. 47 years. Okay. And in that, and back then, when you were living there, your wife was a marine biologist and had an expertise in whales, and you were a private investigator.
I did all kinds of things, but I started working for the Forest Service on their trail crew, and then I ended up meeting a young, brilliant young lawyer named Rick Friedman, who was looking for an investigator, and we got to talking. I had a degree in English. From the University of Washington, I was sort of gregarious. I knew people in the bar scene, and I knew people sort of in the criminal milieu. I don't know how that happened, but he needed somebody to help find people and do interviews. And we talked about storytelling and talked about telling truthful stories about our clients' innocence and their lives.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so I know you went on to write a bunch of books. We'll talk about those in a little bit. But I want to talk about this new book, Big Breath In, and sort of the inspiration for this new book. I just described a marine biologist and a private investigator and things, and that's kind of some of the characters that are in this new book.
Oh, yeah. I in the last several years, I've been spending a lot of time with my wife, who has Parkinson's disease. And Jan is still a marine biologist, still really active in science. And I wanted to write a story about an extraordinary woman and facing her challenges. And I decided to write a book based And I'm based the main character on Jan Straley. And I thought about it and thought about it. And I asked her permission if I could do that. And she wasn't all that excited about it. But she said, after I asked her several times, she said, yeah, it sounds like you really want to do that. So, and I let her pick her own name for the, anybody that was an actual in my family, I let them choose their own names, and she chose the name Delphine.
I love
for
that.
The character.
Yeah, when I was first looking at the book, I'm like, Delphine, how did that name come up? But you have a wonderful sort of acknowledgement section at the end of the book, which sort of details, obviously it's fiction. It's not, it's a novel. It's not real life, but you're drawing inspiration from different things. Like you, she doesn't, her husband has died in the novel, right? So
right.
You killed yourself.
Yeah, that was one of the first decisions. I didn't really want this to morph into some kind of memoir. Mm. I didn't want to get in the way. I didn't want to write about myself. So I just killed the John character off and let him be mentioned through her memories.
Yeah. And you tell a great story about sort of where you came up with the inspiration for the story down in Seattle. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we had been spending a lot of time in the neighborhood around the hospitals in Seattle. And one, we had been staying in the Baroness Hotel, which some of your listeners might have been to there near the hospital. And I came across a, there was a motorcycle tied, chained up to a fence right by the hospital. And it was covered with grit. It had been there a long time. And I was wondering if someone had ridden the motorcycle to the hospital and then never made it out. It was just one of those things that I just got thinking about. And that night, it was a warm night, and I slept with the windows open, and then, you know, the nights down there in Seattle are noisy and lots of sirens in the hospital area. And I just had a dream of Jan driving a motorcycle through the streets of Seattle. It was sort of a wish fulfillment. Jan used to ride a motorcycle when I first met her back in 1973. She drove a motorcycle around Seattle. But then in this dream, she was just tearing it up all through the city streets. And she was thinking and sort of hallucinating about sperm whales as she was doing it. Jan has studied the large marine mammals in the North Pacific for almost 50 years now. And I was just sort of taken by this image. And so it all sort of blended together with the street people that were around the hospital at the same time. And it all just found its way into one kind of wild story.
Right. Can you give us sort of a little log line of what the story of Big Breath Inn is about?
Well, it's about Delphine, who has cancer in this book, and she is staying at the hospital getting her treatments. And she meets a street person who has several babies, several infants. And one night this street person, this woman, is assaulted by her boyfriend. And Delphine tries to help her. Delphine carried a stun gun alone when she was walking the streets alone. And she gets involved with this woman, and the woman and her boyfriend are involved in the criminal milieu of this outlaw adoption agency, setting up illegal adoptions for white supremacists.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Yeah. So the woman disappears from Seattle, and Delphine jumps on the motorcycle which she has been given, and goes off in search of her. And she ends up finding her in over in Yakima, Washington.
And that's where it's set. This novel is set in Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Seattle for the first part, and then on the road, the highways, over to Eastern Washington, and then Yakima, and it ends up in a little farmstead near Loomis.
That's awesome. I'm curious, because you have been, you know, writing about, or, you know, stories set in Alaska with the Cecil Younger series and then the Cold Storage series. What was it like to write a novel in a new place? Like, I mean, I know that the Northwest is very similar to Alaska in terms of, you know, probably descriptions in terms of woods and things like that. But did you find it interesting challenge to sort of change your location?
Yeah, it was. I miss Alaska like crazy. We moved down to California 2 years ago now to be closer to family and for better medical. I have a big family in Seattle. I had spent a lot of time there. I had gone to the University of Washington. So Seattle is familiar to me, and the mood and atmosphere of the city is interesting to me. So, and I had spent a lot of time, you know, in the hospital area. And so that wasn't difficult. That was all part of my dreamscape.
Mm.
Eastern Washington, I had lived and worked there as a child from the time I was about, well, I was 12 till 24. I worked in Eastern Washington. So it was all part of my dream world, and it wasn't difficult. But I'm working on a novel now that's set back in Sitka, which is a Cecil Younger story. I'm trying to get Cecil out of jail. And in this new book, he's out of jail. He gets out of jail.
I love that.
And comes back.
Yeah, that's so cool. Have you found that the writing process for you has sort of changed over the years? I think your first book was in 1992. And so has it changed over that, you know, 30-year period or so?
Well, this is my 13th book, The Big Breath In. And, you know, I keep trying new things. But I have certain patterns that I stick to. A lot of staring out the window time, a kind of broad, creative outlining period. And then once the book finally sort of settles in my brain, I start on page one and just try to churn out a rough draft.
Do you have that routine of, do you have like certain writing hours, or do you write whenever it strikes you?
Well, I try to get as much done every day when I'm working on a rough draft. Now that I'm sort of a caretaker, it's a little more difficult. I have a lot more interruptions than I used to.
Right.
But I try to write so many numbers of pages a day when I'm working on a rough draft, you know, 7 to 10 pages a day if I can.
Yeah, that's a good goal, I guess, because I'm always curious about that. Like, people sometimes, I'm going to write from 8:30 to noon, and I'm going to write this many, or I'm going to write this many pages, or, you know, or I just do it when the mood strikes me. Everybody's a little bit different, so it's really fun to discover that process. How did writing first come into your life? Was it something that you started as a young teenager or even younger, or when did it come to you, or how did you find writing in your life?
Well, my parents loved books and loved literature. My mom read, you know, dozens and dozens of books a month. And my dad was always reading. And so we had a lot of books around. We had lots of bookshelves. And I'm the youngest of five, and my siblings were all very, very smart and did well in school, except I didn't so much. And it turned out that I was dyslexic, and I had trouble with the mechanics. And then I'm in eighth grade, I met a teacher who turned me on to reading and listening and writing poetry. And he let me read it aloud in class. And it just took off for me then. I loved it. And that was eighth grade. And then it was a good way to rebel against my parents and to make them proud of me, to say I wanted them. Because they didn't think I could do it. And, but I had a good time trying. I just got the degree in English and, studied with some amazing professors at the University of Washington. For a year, I studied with a Native American writer named James Welsh, who had lived in Sitka as a child, which I didn't know until years later. But Welsh wrote a book called Riding the Earth Boy 40 and Winter in the Blood. And these books really inspired me. It was life in the West with, complex lives. And I thought, wow, this life where you're just sort of dreaming through this wild, beautiful country, this could be the subject of real literature. And so that's what I wanted to do.
Nice. So I'm curious about what's on the horizon. I know you said you're writing another Cecil Younger book, which is great news for fans of that series. And I'm sure you're going to have some book talks. I think you're going to be in Sitka for a talk for this book at some point. Any plans to come to Juneau at all?
I would love to, but I don't have any plans right now to come to Juneau. We've been making trips up to Alaska. We'll be going to Anchorage in January, but I'm going to be the book comes out in Elliott Bay in Seattle, and I'll be doing a reading there on the 12th, and on the 13th, I'll be in Powell's in Portland. I'll be appearing there with Willie Vlauten, which will be fun. Willie Vlauten is just a wonderful Oregon writer and a musician. He's in a band called the Delines or the Delines. And then Saturday, the 16th, I'll be in Sitka.
Awesome.
At the library.
The library in Sitka. Okay, that's cool. For those listening, you tell your friends in Sitka. That's where John will be. And I'm also curious, last question for you, John. Are there any plans to turn something like the Cecil Younger series into, they're making a lot of TV show these days. You've got a lot of material there. Has there been talks about that?
Yeah, I sold an option for a television series. And they hired script writers and did all that, but they never sold it to a network. There's some problems with making Alaskan stories into TV shows, although I love the last True Detective with Jodie Foster. I thought that was fabulous.
Yeah, getting it right about sort of what Alaska is and all of that. Yeah. There's the difference between the nostalgia view from people who don't live here to what it really is, and to try to capture that, I'm sure is difficult. And then to get it Hollywoodized can also change things as well. But we hope to see something. I think that would be great.
I do too. I would love it. But so far, we got close one time, but not since.
No worries. Well, it's the new book. It's Big Breath In. It's coming out on November 12th. You can get it at your local book retailers or your online retailers, but shop local if you can. John Straley, thank you so much. And you can find out more about John and all of his material and his books at johnstraley.com. Gwyneth Cheese for being here. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. It's always... it's nostalgic to think of my voice going out over the radio in Juneau. So.
We love it. Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Take good care.
Okay, thank you. All right, up next, we'll talk ghoul empowerment with the upcoming Halloween Fun Run from Girls on the Run and Girl Scouts. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today is Halloween, but the fun will continue into this weekend, and Girls on the Run and Juno Girl Scouts is offering a free event for all Juno girls and their families. It's the Halloween Fun Run this Saturday, November 2nd, at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. And here to tell us more is Brianna Stewart from AWARE and the Girls on the Run Greater Alaska Coordinator. Gunath Chish Ha Igudi, thank you for joining us, Brianna. How are you today? Wasa Iati.
Thank you. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween. Perfect timing for, I love the ghoul empowerment that you're sponsoring this weekend. Tell us a little bit about this event.
So this is our third annual Halloween Fun Run. The event started during COVID times when we were looking for fun and creative ways to get people together and let the kids have fun. And so the idea was born, and we're happy to continue the tradition now. We are doing it indoors, so it'll be happening rain or shine and cold and fog. And we will have the turf open for games and playing. We'll do a trick-or-treat run upstairs where the kids can run and get candy. Can't have a Halloween event without candy, right?
Gotta have the candy.
And we have some fun other little treats in store. We'll have some pizza from Bullwinkle's that they donated to us, and just different little door prizes hidden among the track during the run.
I love that. And so who is this for in terms of age-wise?
So Girl Scouts, it starts like kindergarten and up, and for Girls on the Run, we start third grade and up. But we're really opening it to anyone. So anyone in the community that wants to come and run with us and come and play on the turf is welcome to join us.
Is there a specific run that you're going to be doing in terms of like, are there races, or is it just to run around the track kind of thing?
Yeah, it's just to run around the track. You know, with Girls on the Run, we don't even do any races because we want everyone to feel good about, like, you know, just moving forward. It's not about winning or being the fastest. It's just about running and having fun together and moving our bodies and being healthy. So we will, I think last year we aimed to have the kids run around about 10 times, which equals a mile. But we have, you know, varying levels within that as well.
I see. Okay. And I love that. Who came up with ghoul empowerment? Because I think that's so funny.
It is funny, right? It's creative. The Hattush Lakish Coalition Communications Coordinator, Thomasina Anderson, came up with that good tagline, and we have continued to use it. I was inviting people saying, like, scare to join us instead of care to join us. So I'm all about the lines.
The wordplay is awesome. So this is also, it serves as a great sort of awareness campaign for Girls on the Run and what might be coming up. What is happening with Girls on the Run for this season?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So our spring season will be starting in March. We usually have registration open up in January, so anyone who's looking to have their girl sign up for a team or interested in potentially volunteering for a season or coaching can look for more information about that after the holidays and after the winter break on our website, gotrgreateralaska.org.
Okay, so it's gotrgreateralaska.org is the website. I know you also have a Facebook page that people can follow as well. You can just search GOTR Greater Alaska and you'll find the Facebook page. I'm sure you'll get more information from there or on the website for that upcoming spring session, I guess. Is it a session? I guess it's just sort of, it's not camps, right?
Yeah,
it's more of a sessions. You call it what?
Yep. We call it our season, spring season.
Yeah, season. Right. Okay, that's cool. And this...
People can come talk to me about it in person, too, at the Halloween Fun Run.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is if you're interested on this Saturday from 2 to 3:30, is that when it's going to be, right? Is that the right timing of that?
You got it exactly.
Awesome. So it's this Saturday, November 2nd from 2 to 3:30 at the Diamond Park Field House. It's the Halloween Fun Run. Get yourself some ghoul empowerment. I just want to keep saying that because I think it's so fun. Brianna, thank you so much for telling us all about it. There's going to be games and they're going to be able to run around the turf and there's going to be some trick-or-treating and there's going to be some Bullwinkle's pizza. Oh, we should mention this. You're encouraged to come dressed in costumes, right?
Yes, costumes and running shoes.
I love that. So maybe your costume incorporates running shoes, but it doesn't have to, right? It can be anything you want, but then make sure you got those running shoes downstairs so you can get yourself moving.
It'll be a fun time. We're excited to do it.
Awesome. And is it okay if I give out your email here?
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you have more questions about this event or more information on Girls on the Run, you can reach out to Brianna, Brianna, B-R-E-A-N-N-A-S, at awareak.org. Thank you so much, Brianna, for telling us about it. I love that Halloween is continuing a little bit past the actual holiday. I think that's awesome. I really think that's cool. So thank you so much for taking the time and telling us a little bit about it.
Thank you, Boston.
Appreciate it. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Caring for a loved one during their final months of life is hard and difficult to navigate, but you are not alone, and there are services to help in these circumstances. Bartlett Hospital Home Health and Hospice is one of these places. You can learn more at bartletthospital.org/services/hospice. And joining me now to share more about this resource is Heather Richter, who's the director of Home Health and Hospice, as well as Aaron Cusack, who is a hospice social worker, and Amy Skillbred from the Juno Community Foundation, where there is an awesome fund available that we'll talk about that people can donate to help out the hospice care. So, Gunith Cheesh, Ha'iyadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all here. Wasa'iyati, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Aaron?
Doing good.
Awesome. Yeah, Amy, good to see you again.
Doing great. Halloween.
Awesome. Yes, it's definitely Halloween. So let's start with you, Heather. Can you tell us a little bit about home health and hospice over there at Bartlett Regional Hospital?
Yeah, so home health and hospice are both services that are offered in the home setting, of course. With home health, you know, it requires a skilled need for a homebound patient. We offer wound care, education on disease and medication management, physical and occupational therapy, as well as social work and speech therapy and aid services for patients that are maybe having an exacerbation of their disease or had a fall or are recovering from surgery. And moving on over to hospice, we support individuals with a terminal illness. And so We offer chaplain services, social worker services. We have a wonderful, robust team of volunteers that can go in and, you know, do things like light housekeeping or reading to a patient, and just really keeping them company or assisting the family with chores or things that might just be, they might need a little bit of help on. We also offer RN services that go in and provide really good education on disease progression, medication management, how to manage those middle of the night symptoms that come along with these terminal illnesses. So our nurses are available on call 24 hours a day to really support patients as well as their loved ones.
Wow. And Erin, how does someone know when it's time to get hospice involved? Is that going to be a process that the doctors are going to say something, or the care is going to happen, or is it something that you need to be aware of as you're taking care of someone who may be going through a terminal illness?
That's a good question. I would say perhaps it's a combination of all of the above. Certainly the conversation, we would want it to start in somebody's primary care or with their primary care physician or provider to say, you know, here's where my disease may be at, here's how I'm feeling about things, you know, what are the next steps? But then also it will be very important to include family, loved ones, support system in that conversation as well. So I would say knowing when the time is right for each person will be a completely individualized different experience, but I would definitely say earlier involvement is better, if at all possible, because then we can start forming those relationships with patients and their families.
I see. Yeah. And I was thinking about, like, how do you, when you get diagnosed with, let's say you get told, you know, you have a few months to live or whatever that might be, is there a specific time period that hospice comes into play? Like, I can only, like, if I know I'm going to be having something happen to me in a year, is that time for hospice, or is it more when I'm getting to the point where I can't take care of myself, or I don't have a loved one to take care of me? Or how does that work exactly? When do I know it's time?
So the hospice services are, you know, there's a requirement by the physician to say, I believe that if the illness were to run its natural course, that the illness will run its course within 6 months. So there is a 6 month timeline. However, that's not to say that we kick people off at the 6 month mark. You know, it just requires our medical director to come out and do an assessment and recertify. And so the 6 month initial timeline is what we look for to bring a patient on. But again, we meet them where they're at. And as things progress, we just ensure that things are going smoothly for them and we're there throughout that process.
Now, I've heard that hospice is, I love that you also have the home health. I know we're focusing on hospice really today, but I know the home health is a great thing that you all do as well. But I've heard that hospice is that's the time where you're now trying to ease folks into the transition, as opposed to, you know, we know the credo of the health industry or doctors is to continue life as long as possible. Mm-hmm. But Is that still sort of how you think of hospice, as like, this is now we're working to transition so we can ease the pain or we can ease the suffering as you're making that transition?
Right. It is a transition period. You know, our goal with hospice is to shift our thinking from treatment, you know, going in for all of these scans and getting poked and prodded with labs and all of these interventions to, I want to be comfortable, I want to be home with my family. And so it's no longer driven by all of these physician appointments or getting up and out of the house to do physical therapy or whatever that might look like for their illness. It's essentially comfort and quality of life at the end of life.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And really the treatment of symptoms with respect to the patient's like goals of care and treatment wishes too, you know, which will look so individualized for each hospice patient.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, because my father-in-law used hospice, not here, but where he was. And it was really wonderful having somebody who could come in and understood it and was really working with the family and helping everybody. So it's not just helping the patient.
Right. That's true. It helps the family as well, which is really nice. I know I went through it with my mother as well. And that's why I was asking, because she was in the hospice care, but there were still doctors who wanted to try to prolong and do surgeries and things. And I just, I didn't understand that, you know, in terms of what they were telling me versus what I was seeing versus what some of the other people were telling me. So it was just, it's a very interesting time. It's a tough time. It's a tough time for everybody to go through that. So knowing that you're not alone, knowing that you have services like this are really valuable. And Amy, you have a fund at the Juno Community Foundation that can help, right? Is that what
we do? Yeah. We have a Juno Hospice Fund, and we have been building an endowment for several years now and expect to be providing anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 a year to hospice. And right now we're in a transition period because hospice used to be at Catholic Community Services, moved to Bartlett, and it takes a little bit of time for a new program to get started and get up to speed, have enough clients and enough employees to really work and make it a fully functioning hospice that can cover all its own costs. And so what we've been doing this year, and we expect for about five more years, along with the End of Life Care Foundation, is supporting the hospice program so that we make sure that it's we retain hospice in Juneau, because it is a beloved organization in Juneau. And having hospice in Juneau is just an amazing thing for a small community. And it really helps people tremendously.
Yeah, I think if we didn't have it, it would be very sad indeed.
Right.
Because so many folks need that transition when you have something that's terminal like that. And I do want to, you're talking about money. And so I do want to mention this about support, and like people think maybe hospice costs me money, but it is covered by insurance if you have insurance.
It is, that's correct. And we take patients on regardless of payer source. So we meet them where they're at and we take them on regardless.
That's good news for folks, I think, to know that that's possible.
And we take donations to help make that happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's all so
even if you don't have someone who is in hospice, or you know, if you just want to help out, you can make a donation. And that's junocf.org is where you can find that fund. You just search the Juno Hospice Fund, and you can make a donation to that and support this kind of work in our community, which is so valuable. And I hadn't realized that it had transferred from Catholic Community Service to Bartlett. So how is it in terms of y'all getting up to speed? Are you looking for employees? Do you need more nurses? Do you need more people? Are there jobs available?
I will say we do have two nurse positions open. We've got a casual nurse position where, you know, if a nurse wants to come in a couple days a week or pick up some call shifts, that would be extremely helpful. And one of our nurses is transferring to another department, so that will be coming open as well. But we are otherwise fully staffed. We've got a wonderful, wonderful social worker here with me.
We've got that's you, Erin.
Great nurses, chaplains.
Embarrassing.
And again, our volunteer program has been growing pretty rapidly as well. We've got some volunteers that came from the previous agency in town, and we're always looking for more volunteers as well.
And well, I believe all hospices have a physician who oversees.
We do. Dr. Dunn is our medical director.
Okay, great. Well, it's a fantastic service you all provide. It's wonderful to have it in our little community of Juno. I'm glad that it's continuing, that it didn't, you know, go by the wayside or anything like that. And the fact that you're all doing this work, it's really like, you know, I know we're here on Halloween, but what you're all doing is saintly. So I think it's the opposite of what we usually celebrate on Halloween. So I really appreciate that. Gunathchish and Amy, the work you're doing at the Community Foundation to have this fund. There's so many funds at the Community Foundation, but this one supports this work specifically, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and one more plug, and I'll shift it back to Heather for Light Up Your Life.
Yeah, we're planning on hosting our first annual Light Up a Life event Friday, December 13th from 5 to 8 p.m. on the main Bartlett campus in the lobby and in the gallery. And so Light Up a Life is an event where people come together in remembrance of those that they've loved and lost. Typically, there is a tree lighting ceremony. We're going to be making ornaments and hanging them on the tree as well. And so we look forward to sharing more details about
that. Is that going to be on your website, or is that going to be on a Facebook page somewhere that we can find?
Yeah, we just actually rolled out our Facebook page. So we're at Bartlett Home Health and Hospice, and we'll be posting more details there.
That's great, because I know sometimes the bigger websites you can get lost, but if you go to Facebook and search Bartlett Home Health and Hospice, you'll find it and can keep it up to date on this event that's happening in December. That's fantastic. Light up a life. Bartlett Home Health and Hospice. You can find more at bartletthospital.org/services-hospice. You can make a donation at the junocf.org to the Juno Hospice Fund. Thank you so much, Gunnith Cheese, for being here and telling us all about this.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. First Friday is coming tomorrow. Tons of activities and happenings around town, including Fubao at Kindred Post. We'll talk to him next about what he's got in store. You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Artist Fubao Hartle is back at Kindred Post this Friday with his new 2025 calendar, plus note cards, prints, and more, all created from his original Alaska photographs. In addition to his artwork, Fubao is a passionate advocate for people with disabilities and is also an athlete in the Special Olympics of Alaska. Plus, he's an avid bowler. Find out more at photosbyfubao, that's F-U-B-A-O.com, photosbyfubao.com. Welcome, Fubao. And, of course, Fubao's mom, Claire, welcome. Gunnith Cheese, for being here today.
Thank you. Again, this is a big deal for me. We need to have a high turnout. Really high turnout.
Yeah, so tell me what's happening Friday. You're going to be at Kindred Post?
Yes, this is my second year, third year at Kindred Post. They are really excited to have me. They are really, really excited to have me back again.
Yeah, I love that. And you have new photos, right? So these aren't just going to be a rehash of the stuff Fubao did before. This is going to be new photos. I see you brought in one of these 2025 calendars. There's a lovely picture of a mountain on there. It says Southeast Alaska Adventures 2025 calendar photos by Fubao. And you have, oh man, you've got like January's the Norris Glacier. And when did you take all these photos?
Let my mom explain the Norris Glacier one.
Okay, well, a lot of them were in the past couple of years. The Norris Glacier was probably like 4 or 5 years ago. But
I see, yeah.
I won a raffle and got tickets on a helicopter ride up to the glacier.
Oh, nice.
So Fubao got some great shots.
That's awesome. And you've got Peril Strait in here.
Yes.
And that's obviously, looks like you took that maybe from a boat. Did you take that from a boat?
Yes, from my parents' boat.
Oh, nice. You've also got, is it Takaz Bay?
Takats.
Takats Bay. That's Mount Edgecombe. I see that in here. Oh, that's a beautiful photograph. It's got sort of the gray sky with the mountain in the background. These are great. I mean,
Thank you. You
have a full calendar, and you'll have these on Friday at Kindred Post, right?
Yes, it's from 4:30 to 7 p.m.
Yep.
Right, 4:30 to 7 p.m. at Kindred Post on Friday. And then you also have these cool note cards. I'm looking at Mendenhall Glacier, and this one is also Mendenhall Glacier. Yeah, these are great photos. One's in the winter, one's in the spring. So I guess it depends on whatever feeling you've got. You've got the options for that.
Right, and those are new for this year. He still has, you know, six other cards available. And then his newer cards and his calendar are all made in Alaska, and he has a permit for that as well. So they're official Made in Alaska products. You'll see the logo on the back of the note cards and the calendar.
I see that. I do love that. So how does that work?
So to have a Made in Alaska product, you have to submit an application and explain, you know, how the where the materials are from, the process to create. And they decide if you meet the qualifications. And
then that's so cool.
You pay a permit fee, and then they allow you to use that logo if you qualify.
I love that. So tell me what else has been going on, Fubao. You've been doing a lot of this, making up your stuff for this thing that's happening Friday. But what else have you been getting into these days?
Should I tell him about the Instagram page? we might not know if people want to follow me on social media. I have my own Instagram page. It's Photos by Fubao.
Photos by Fubao.
That's new. He just started that a few weeks ago. Figured getting up to modern technology.
I love that. So, I mean, you're quite the businessman, Fubao. I love this in terms of, like, creating all of these things for yourself and, like, making this happen. I'm assuming that beyond Kindred Post this Friday, are you going to also be at Public Market this year?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So you'll be at Public Market. If for some reason you can't make it this Friday to Kindred Post, Fubao will be at Public Market. I remember that's where I bought my calendar last year, was at Public Market. It hangs in my office. I love looking at it. Thank you so much for doing that. And how about, is bowling happening now or did that already happen?
Bowling happened and they all going to state next weekend. Go athletes.
Oh, yeah, I think in a couple of weekends. Yep, bowling season recently finished, wrapped up, and last Sunday they had their pizza party end of season.
Nice.
So they selected three teams to go up to Anchorage, so all the bowlers are excited about that. And then Fubao started a new sport this year.
Uh-oh, what new sport are we starting now, Fubao?
Swimming. And then for bowling, it's here late, but whoever wins state, it will be in the U.S. games also.
Well, they use it to select the U.S. game participants for bowling. But so tell them a little bit more about swimming.
Yeah. I went to state also for swimming as my first time at state. I've never been to state. It was pretty fired up.
Yes, lots of athletes competing at the pool. They also had the basketball and gymnastics and a whole bunch of different summer games.
Oh,
and it
okay.
was really cool. The Juno basketball team brought home the gold medal.
Nice.
And for basketball. And then the swimmers brought home medals as well. So that was pretty
exciting.
So
what kind of events are you swimming in? Are you doing like, is it a relay or is it individual? What are you participating in?
Freestyle swim and water walking.
Okay, freestyle swim. And what was the second one?
Water walking.
Water walking. Oh, okay. So you like do like, is it like a race kind of?
Yes.
Oh, water. Okay, that's great because I love swimming. I think swimming is one of the best activities. It really gets your muscles moving. Do your muscles hurt afterwards?
No.
Well, that's good because mine do. Oh, that's so great. And why did you decide to pick up swimming?
Because I always wanted to do state games, but I really, really like swimming, and it's really, really fun to do swimming, and it's really, really fun to do some and be active in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Friday, you're going to be at the Kindred Post.
Yes.
You're going to be there from 4:30 to 7. You're going to have all these things available. And you've been taking pictures a long time, right? You've been taking pictures since you were a kid?
Yep.
How did you get into taking pictures?
Because it's really, really, I have a disability and I want to empower, it's easy for me to take pieces of draw.
Okay, I see.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
If somebody wants to start on business, I really encourage them to do it because we need more people who have disabilities to start up their own business.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you were taking photos and then you decided that you wanted to be able to sell these things, right?
Yes.
So you decided to become a business person.
Yes, thank you. Thanks to my business mom, Mama Joe.
Mom helps you out,
yep.
I'm sure. Yeah, helps you with the business. But you probably talk about ideas and creativity and different things that you want to do and pictures you want to select for the different postcards and stuff, I would bet.
Yes.
Yeah, how do you decide which ones are going to go in the calendar?
Pick and choose really particular with pictures as a business owner. I need to be not pick anyone. I need to pick and choose which one is a good quality.
Good quality.
Needs to have fingers out of the picture. Which one needs to not be so blurry?
Right, not blurry, not have fingers in it. I get all that. And how do you choose which one should go with which month?
We have a good system. It's a online system. Is it Google?
No. We have. Like, for example, last summer he took, like, I think 1,800 pictures.
Whoa.
So then we spend quite a bit of time culling them.
I see.
And kind of get favorites, and then we go through that and, like, the favorites of the favorites and figure out, okay, what can we use this for, what can we use that for.
I see.
But then for the months, I usually, will go through and I'll be like, well, what one reminds you of January?
Or
some of them, sometimes it's like 1 year... It was like, okay, here's a picture of a fish. Who do you know that loves fishing? So he picked, that picture to be the month of, like, one of his uncle's birthdays.
Things
like that.
He'll
be like, oh, this is my mom's birthday. I think she'll like that. So, some just fun things like that.
I love that. That's so cool, man. That is really awesome. Well, Fubao is going to be at Kindred Post this Friday from 4:30 to 7 p.m. With all new stuff, a new calendar, new cards, in addition to the other cards that will also still be available. And you'll get to say hi to Fubao. He might sign something for you. He's signing all of his calendars on the back, which is nice. Yes, Fubao?
Can I say something? We need to have a jam-packed Kindred Post. Bumper-to-bumper, streets in together, and have a jam-packed Kindred Post.
Absolutely, we need a jam-packed Kindred Post. It's not that big, so if we can get, 70 people in there, it'd probably feel pretty full.
Yes.
I think that would be great. Well, thank you, Fubao, for coming in. Thank you, Claire, for coming in as well and telling us all about this. It's Fubao Hartle at the Kindred Post this Friday from 4:30 to 7. And you can find out more about Fubao at his website, Photos by Fubao. That's F-U-B-A-O, photosbyfubao.com. Or follow him on his new Instagram page at Fubao. At Photos by Fubao,
exactly.
Right? The same
exactly.
as the website.
Yes. Right, and then you'll see what other upcoming events and different things he has going on.
Absolutely, you get to see new pictures that he takes, all kinds of things. Well, thank you for coming, I really appreciate it. Gonna cheese.
Gonna cheese.
And that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we preview the new exhibit at the Alaska State Museum, Honoring the Ordinary. Plus, we chat with the Juno Ski Club, Juno Audubon, and look ahead to Juno Community Band's upcoming concert. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from DJ Thompson. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.